Today's Yom HaTzma'ut, as you well know, and therefore in honor of Yom HaTzma'ut, I always like to talk about Inyanim relating to Eretz Yisrael, and if we have an opportunity to talk about Medinat Yisrael and what it means to us, and the general value of Eretz Yisrael, you know, something that's very, very difficult for us to communicate here in Chutz La'aretz. I was remarking to many of you before that when it comes to even celebrating Yom HaTzma'ut, it's a very confusing day in Chutz La'aretz, because I know in yeshiva here, when we've tried to celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut with dancing and with a band and with a real genuine celebration, the kids weren't really so into it. They felt a little removed from it. It wasn't like Purim where they're all excited and they're into it, and there's no drinking here in Purim, and still they're excited and into it because they know that that's a real holiday. They know that's something they can get excited about, and they didn't really relate so much to Yom HaTzma'ut. So they tried a different thing now, where we sit down in the dark and sing slow songs. But to me, that has more of a Tisha B'Av feel than a Yom HaTzma'ut feel. You know, this is a celebration. And I realize that the fundamental problem is we're dealing with an audience of people who are here and not in Israel. So obviously, al pi rov, the large majority of us may pay a lot of lip service to how much we love Eretz Yisrael, but don't really love it as much as maybe we should. Not so much so that we're willing to make sacrifices, myself included, obviously, and that we're willing to go there and to go where Jews belong and to live there. So I think one of the things that we need to do is to learn about Eretz Yisrael, to learn about why it's so important, what's so special about it, what's so amazing about it, why it's a no-brainer that's where a Jew belongs. Why the question we ask ourselves should not be, why is that guy making Aliyah? Or why are you going to Israel? But should be, why are we not making Aliyah? Meaning the default position is that a Jew belongs in Israel. We are fish out of water when we are not in Israel. When we are not in Eretz Yisrael, it's where we belong. And we need to study some of the sources on this and to look into it a little bit. So Thursdays, generally, I like to do hakdamos of interesting or important svarim. And we've done a few Eretz Yisrael-related ones. We've done the Satmar Rebbe, we've done the anti-Eretz Yisrael related one, but we've also done Im HaBanim Semecha. So this year, I would like to discuss the Hakdama to the Sefer Ir HaKodesh VaMikdash. It comes in three volumes, but it's overall five chalakim. The first volume is two chalakim, and then Chel Gimel is its own volume, then Dalim and Hay are together. It's five chalakim, three volumes, written by Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky. Now, a little bit about Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky. He was born in 1874 in Europe, in Lita. He made Aliyah when he was 8 years old. From the time he made Aliyah, he never left Eretz Yisrael again. He lived by his grandfather when he made Aliyah. He did not make Aliyah with his parents. He learned in Yeshiva's Eitz Chaim, and he became a very, very big Talmud Chacham. He was Chavrusos with Ratzvi Pesach Frank as a youngster. Tremendous Baki in Shas, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Shas and Poskim. Really, really outstanding Baki in everything. In Nigla, Nistar. At the end of his life, he studied a lot of Nistar. He is most famous for another Sefer that he wrote called Gesher HaChaim. You should never know from these things, but Gesher HaChaim is the Sefer on Avelus. It is the most widely used and respected Sefer in the last couple of hundred years, written on Hilchos Avelus, and that's a Sefer. It's a couple of volumes written by Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky. Rav Yechiel Michal was known for having a great Ahavas Eretz Yisrael. Much of the information that I'm giving you right now is from before the Hakdama. His son wrote like a 15-page introduction to who his father was and to what the book is about before we even get to the Hakdama. And his son writes over there that one time a bunch of Rabbanim were coming to visit Rav Yechiel Michal, and something happened where something came loose from the ceiling and a clod of dirt came down from the ceiling. He was living in not the best conditions. So the guest asked him, why do you live in such a dilapidated, horrible home where there are things falling apart and dirt is coming out of the ceiling? So he responded, Al Afar Zed Darku Avosenu Hakadoshim Nivienu Chosenu Hatanoim Vamoroim. This is the same dirt. This dirt that you disparage is the dirt that our Avos HaKadoshim, the Nevi'im, the Tanoim and the Amoraim walked on. That's the dirt. Kama Halicho Shel Kedusha Safag Afar Zeh Vareu Kadosh V'Tahar. Says Adraba, this dirt is Kadosh V'Tahar. This dirt has taken in so much Kedusha over the years. This is the kind of attitude someone has. You know, most of us, we see something dirty, it's like, just clean it up. To him, the dirt of Eretz Yisrael, it was so precious, it was so special, it was so full of Kedusha. He loved Eretz Yisrael so much, he refused to leave Eretz Yisrael, like I mentioned. His son writes that there were three opportunities where they were going to send him to various conventions or meetings that were occurring in Chutz La'aretz, and they wanted to send him, and all three times something happened, and he was unable to go, and he took that as a siman, that he's never supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael, so he never left Eretz Yisrael the rest of his life. Furthermore, it says that when he got to Yerushalayim, he was a 10-year-old boy, first time he ever went to Yerushalayim, and his uncle, who was one of the major movers and shakers in developing communities in Israel, particularly around Yerushalayim, Rav Yosef Rivlin, was one of the major builders of Yerushalayim, of the new Yerushalayim, not the Aretika, outside of the Chomos of the Aretika. So he brought him to the Kotel, Maravi, and the whole time, this, from far away, his uncle showed him, you see that? That's the Kotel. And his uncle noticed, 10-year-old boy, he's walking the whole rest of the time to the Kotel, he's just staring at it the entire time. He didn't take his eyes were glued to the Kotel, would not remove his eyes from the Kotel the entire time. And for whatever it was, a 20-minute walk, he's just staring the entire time. And they get to the Kotel, and Rechiel Michal Tukachinsky, as a 10-year-old boy, says to his uncle, he says, maybe you could explain this to me. How do people just walk by such a makom kadosh without looking? How do they look away? Like he had this in him. It was like in his DNA. This desire to connect to the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. He was also obviously, because of this desire to connect to the kedusha, an unusual baki regarding Inyanei Eretz Yisrael. This whole Sefer, all three volumes, are about Inyanei Min Halacha, that Eretz Yisrael. At what point were the Chomos, did each part become Kadosh? What are the Halachos of the various levels of Kedusha? What are the Halachos of Maaseh Sheni? And his Bikiyus, his Bavli Yerushalmi, everything, his analysis is very, very clear, very strong. He was uniquely qualified to write a Sefer like this. And he had relationships with great Gedolim, even outside of the Zionist world. It says in the Hakdama that Chazon Ish respected his knowledge of Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim related issues very, very much. So much so that when the Chazon Ish first came to Yerushalayim in the year Tavshin, it's the end of it, Tavshin, no more two letters, Tavshin, 72 years ago, when the Chazon Ish first visited Yerushalayim, he went to visit with Rabbi Chil Michal, and he asked him, what about going to the Kotel? Are you allowed to go all the way up until the Kotel? Are you allowed to walk there? We all have Tumah of Zav, so you're allowed to walk there. So Rabbi Chil Michal told him his shita, that you're allowed to walk all the way up until the Kotel, but you shouldn't stick your hands in it. That was his shita. And next day, the Chazon Ish went to the Kotel, and he told all of his chaver that was with him not to stick their hands in the Kotel. That he was, that's what Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky Paskin. He's the Baki, he's the Gadol Adar on Inyanim of Eretz Yisrael. And he also has correspondences with such famous anti-Zionists, as the Munkach Rebbe, the Minchas Lazar. Somehow he pulled off this trick to be a Zionist and still very widely respected outside of the Zionist camp, which is not such an easy thing to do. Normally, if you're a Zionist, so no matter how great a Talmud Chacham you are, you're immediately, by definition, you're not called a Gadol. They don't call you a Gadol because you're a Zionist. So he somehow managed to be a genuine Gadol, both Talmud Chacham and widely respected, even though he was a Zionist. And he wrote many, many amazing Svarim. I have a whole list of the Svarim here. I'm not going to get into all the different Svarim that he wrote. We're going to focus on the Hakdama Ti'era Kodesh V'Amikdash. The first part of the Hakdama Ti'era Kodesh V'Amikdash, he emphasizes the value of the number 10 in Judaism. Number 10, Dafka relates to Eretz Yisrael because we know the Mishnah tells us that there are Eser Kedushas. There are 10 levels of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, the most Kadosh place being the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself, but the entire land is Kadosh, and there are different Madregos of Kedusha from where you, and we'll go through them in a moment, but from when you first go over the threshold into Eretz Yisrael until you get to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And he says that the number 10 is not a randomly chosen number. When we give a list of Kedushas, the number 10, everything comes in 10. The way our system of numbers work is it comes in 10. Right? You count to 10, and then all you got to do is know, go in the next one. Once you get to, you go 10 plus 1 is 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, right? You take the you're back in the singles plus the 10. You get to 20, 21, 22. It's 10s plus the 1. Every 10, it starts again. It's not that the numbers just keep on going. That's the way our system of numbers work. And the idea is that 10 is supposed to be like completeness. It's shlemus. It brings you to a new level. And after you get to shlemus, it goes back to 1, which is the one and only, the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the one of the that's the only one in the Bria. And he says that's why when you get to the number 1,000, how do you say 1,000 in Hebrew? Hebrew, Aleph, right? Aleph happens to be Aleph. Aleph, 1. Once you get to 1,000, again, it's many, many tens, and then you get to a new level of tens, and it's 1. You're back to the Aleph, to the 1, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it goes through all of the various tens in Judaism. Now, Sarama, Maros, Nivra, Olam, 10 Doros, Me'adam, Noach, 10 Doros from Noach to Avram. You know, various tens, not going to go through all of them. They're listed in front of you in your packets. And there, 10 plays a critical role in terms of determining Kedusha. When you have 10 people, that's when the Shechinta Sharia, that's when you have the Shechina with you, and you're therefore able to say Dvarim Shebekedusha. When it comes to benching, we change the words of the Mezuman when we get to 10, and then again, when we get to, what's the next level according to the Mishnah Brachos Memtes, when we get to 100, which is 10 tens, and then again, when we get to 1,000, which is 10 hundreds, and then again when we get to 10,000, which is 10,000s. So it all works with the number 10. And again, he has dozens and dozens of examples of where the number 10 comes into play. But let's focus on the Kedusha. So he says there are Eser Kedushas. Starts with the Ayaros Mekafos Choma. That Ayaros Mekafos Choma, a Metzora is sent out from cities that are surrounded by a wall. Metzora is not allowed to stay in that city. He sent Mechutz Machne, even the Machne Yisrael, that's the din of a Metzora. Then you have the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is on a higher level of Kedusha than just Stam, a city that's surrounded by a wall. Why? Yerushalayim, you eat Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. You have to eat Maaser Sheni only in Yerushalayim. Kachim Kalim, certain karbanos, like let's say Karban Shlamim, doesn't have to be eaten in the Beis HaMikdash. You can eat outside of the Beis HaMikdash as long as you're in Yerushalayim. It's Yerushalayim din. Then you move past Yerushalayim and you get to the Har HaBayis. The Har HaBayis has its own level of Kedusha. A Zav is not allowed to go on the Har HaBayis. Why do we not go on Har HaBayis for the most part nowadays? Because we are assumed to be Bituma Zav. The Chazal goes there that every Amma Aretz has the status of a Zav. So a Zav is not allowed to go in Har HaBayis. So there's Machlokas. Some say, well, you can go to the Mikveh and solve that problem, then you won't be a Zav, and then you can go in Har HaBayis. We're still Tamei Mason, but Tamei Mason are allowed to go in Har HaBayis. Just a Zav is not allowed to go in Har HaBayis. Then, beyond that area, there's the Chel, the surface surrounding area of the Har HaBayis, almost at the edge, where Goyim and Tamei Mesim aren't allowed to come in. So as long as you know which parts of Har HaBayis are not yet at the next level of Kedusha, if someone is not a Zav anymore, but they're only Tamei Mes, they'd be allowed to go. Then the Ezros Nashim, where Tvul Yom cannot go. Then you have the Ezros Yisrael, where Mechusar Kippurim is not allowed to enter. The difference between Tvul Yom and Mechusar Kippurim, Tvul Yom is somebody who went to the mikveh, but has to wait till nightfall till he becomes tahar. Mechusar Kippurim doesn't only have to wait till nightfall, he has to wait till the next day where he can bring a karban, and only when he brings that karban does he become completely tahar. So Mechusar Kippurim is not quite as bad as a Tevil Yom. So Mechusar Kippurim is allowed to go to the Ezros Nashim, but not to the Ezros Yisrael. Then you have the Ezros Kohanim, where regular Yisraelim are not allowed to go unless there's a major need to do smicha, to do shchita, tnufa. But other than that, just to be a rekanis for a regular Yisrael to go into the Ezros Kohanim would not be permitted. Then you have the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, where someone who's a Balmum, even a Kohen, if he's a Balmum, he's not allowed to enter. If he's Prua Rosh, if his head is uncovered, he's not allowed to enter. Then you have the Heichel, where you need to do Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim to enter the Heichel. You need to wash your hands and feet. That's what we call the Kodesh. And then, of course, you have the ultimate in Kedusha, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Kodesh HaKadoshim, only the holiest man in the world on the holiest day of the year is allowed to go to that holiest place on earth. and that is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it's all within in a series of tens. Kedusha also is in a series of tens to highlight that that's the most complete level of Kedusha is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But the Kodesh HaKadoshim also reveals to us that that's where the Kedusha emanates from. That every other Kedusha, as you get further away, you go down and down Madregos of Kedusha. Now, Eretz Yisrael is the focal point of the world. Chazal tell us that it's the Tiburo Shalolam, that it is the center of the world. The globe is a globe, it's a ball. So, you know, you can hold it whichever which way you want. But Eretz Yisrael, we hold it with Eretz Yisrael at the center. Yerushalayim is the center of Eretz Yisrael, and the Mikdash is the center of Yerushalayim. So the rest of the world was created around Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the focal point. It's where everything begins in humanity. And that's why Lahalacha, even Lahalacha, Rav Yechiel Michal Dugashinsky was also a great expert in Zmanim. There's a major discussion in Halacha about the international dateline. There's a need to have an international dateline. Otherwise, you would never know what day it is because you keep going around the earth. If there's not a day where you, a point somewhere where you cut it off and say, okay, on this side of the line it's Thursday, and that side of the line it's Friday, then, you know, we wouldn't be able to have a normal calendar. It wouldn't work if you think about it enough, because you keep traveling, you know, the time change. So it just wouldn't work. So there's a need for an international dateline. But the problem is, there's no Gemara that says anywhere where the international dateline is. There's no pasuk that tells us where the international dateline is. So this was a major discussion, still is, in Poskim. And it became obviously much more important when air travel became more popular and people were able to move around much more freely, to move around the entire earth much more freely. So he was a big expert in Zmanim, and he had his own shita. Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky had his own shita in the international dateline. He wrote a whole sefer about it. Not everyone accepted his shita. There are many other shitas about it as well, but his basic premise is that it all starts with Yerushalayim at the center. If you assume Yerushalayim is the center of the world, so then you build the dateline around that, meaning halfway around from Yerushalayim is where the dateline is going to be. You understand? Meaning it has to be with Yerushalayim at the center of the world. And that's halacha. So just Yerushalayim at the center is not just a nice dvar hashkafa, that the halacha actually determines that Yerushalayim is at the center of the world. Since it's the center of everything, it's also how we relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam through Eretz Yisrael and through Yerushalayim. Where do we face when we daven? We face Yerushalayim. A man has physical drives and spiritual drives. There are a lot of things we try to accomplish in life. The key difference, though, is that physical drives are there. They're inborn. You don't need to understand anything. You don't need to learn anything. It's just natural. You know you need to eat. You know you need to sleep. You know that you need certain things to take care of yourself physically. Spiritual drives sometimes need to be educated. Person doesn't necessarily know that he needs the spiritual sustenance of Eretz Yisrael, that he needs to be focused on Eretz Yisrael. One of the great scandals, in my opinion, my very humble opinion, of many yeshivos in Chutz La'aretz, particularly those that don't relate in a positive way to Medinat Yisrael, is that because they're so scared of relating in a positive way to Medinat Yisrael, they sort of just don't relate to Eretz Yisrael at all. And that's a terrible, terrible thing to do, because our religion is based around God and His land. Everything, every parsha in the Torah, everything is about Eretz Yisrael. Half of the mitzvos, look how many mitzvos in the Sefer HaMitzvot are only done in Eretz Yisrael, are only done when we have a Beis HaMikdash. That has to be our yearning, that has to be our desire. Forget about whether there's a technical mitzvah to live there or not. Without living there, you're not doing so many other mitzvos. It's so clearly, for anyone who has any sense of what Judaism is about, it's so clearly a focal point of our religion. Rav Schacht always likes to tell the story that they once asked Rav Kook, why are you so obsessed with Eretz Yisrael? What's this craze that you have with Eretz Yisrael? And Rav Kook said, my personality is just based on the Torah. And whatever the Torah emphasizes, I emphasize. It happens to be the Torah from Parshas Lech Lecha and on emphasizes Eretz Yisrael in every single parsha. So you can make something else the focal point of your religion, but, you know, if the Torah emphasizes Eretz Yisrael in every single parsha, so that's obviously a major focal point. Even before it was recognized as Makom Kadosh, and this Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky comes back to a lot in the guf of the Sefer itself, He says that even before it was recognized as Makom Kadosh by man, it was inherently built. HaKadosh Baruch Hu inherently created Eretz Yisrael with Kedusha. Adam, his children, Noach, all brought karbanos dafka there. Why did they bring karbanos there? How did they know? There was no Beis HaMikdash there. There was no one that I was ever Mekadesh the Makom. How did they know? They were much more attuned to the nature and the potential of any given piece of land, and they understood that that was something that was a special place. Akedas Yitzchak, dafka had to be there. Only later were we actually Mekadesh it. Was there human involvement in being Mekadesh the land through wars and through Nevi'im? But even before that ever happened, there's a critical point. Before that ever, it's not only Jews were there from the days of Joshua. No, it's before that. It's before it ever happened. This land had Kedusha. Think about the... We'll get to the historical yearning for it a little bit later, but there are halachic implications over here. He says the Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvah Kufnun Gimel, that in order to be koveya the Jewish calendar, it has to start in Eretz Yisrael. It has to be determined in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam says that if there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael to be koveya, when the calendar should be, when Rosh Chodesh should be, when the Yom Tovim should be, then the whole calendar will fall apart. Our whole calendar wouldn't be able to work. It has to start in Eretz Yisrael. That's why Rabbi Chil Michel Tukachinsky published another Sefer, not just Sefer, a Luach, every single year, for many, many years, for decades, called the Luach Eretz Yisrael. He tried to publish a calendar that let us know all the important dates, when everything is, what the halachos were on those days, because it all has to come from Eretz Yisrael. Ki mitzion te tzor, it all has to come from there, and then expand out to the rest of the world. The Rambam, Rosh Hashanah also quotes this in Bikvei Hatzon, the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos and Mechoros says that only people in Israel are called Kahal. Outside of the Eretz Yisrael, Jews are not called Kahal. We're only part of the community of Jews, the full-fledged members of the community, when we live in Eretz Yisrael. So when it comes to a decision that the Jewish people as a whole need to make, the only ones that get a vote are the ones that live in Eretz Yisrael. The ones that don't live in Eretz Yisrael are still going through the application process to becoming full members of the club. Now obviously we're chayiv and mitzvos and everything, but we don't get the full rights and privileges that a Jew should get. Why? Again, this is what Eretz Yisrael means to us. We have to feel a certain emptiness when we are outside of Eretz Yisrael, and we have to appreciate the incredible opportunity to be in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, which did not always exist for most of our history. We didn't have these kinds of opportunities. It's a very, very unique period in history that we're zocha to be living in. The Rambam, in the first paragraph of Hilchos Sanhedrin, Halacha Yudalid, goes so far as to say that if all Chachmei Eretz Yisrael were to get together and decide to give somebody smicha, they can have smicha. What we have nowadays isn't real smicha. What we have nowadays is what we call heter hora, based on the sugyas at the beginning of Masech Sanhedrin, where people weren't able to communicate their psakim effectively, and in order to make sure that people are good communicators, they invented this thing called hetero ra'a, where you had to take an oral test before you were allowed to paskin, and you were told, Yora, now you can go ahead and paskin. But smicha, which is a totally different thing, smicha, which allows you to sit on a Sanhedrin that's going to be dan din in nefashos, and it's going to give malchus, smicha, which has to be ishmi piyish for Moshe Rabbeinu, all the way down with an unbroken chain, how are we ever going to get it back? How are we going to be able to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash if no one has smicha and there's no one alive that was alive in the last generation that people still had smicha? The chain is broken, says the Rambam. All of the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael will get together and they will decide somebody deserves smicha and that person will have smicha. Why only the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael? Why not the Chachmei everywhere? Why not the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah in Chutz La'aretz? Why not anywhere? Rosh Yeshiva in YU? Why not? Oh, why is it dafka the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael? Because when it comes to decisions that affect Klal Yisrael, the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael have a unique position. There's an abundance of literature. Rav Yechiel Michel writes that he couldn't possibly try to summarize all the literature in Chazal about Yerushalayim and about Eretz Yisrael. It's mamish zeh shara shamayim, in the words of Yaakov Avinu, that he woke up and he said he realized that he's right by the gates of heaven, and there's no way to be able to go through all of it. But he said that traditionally, the Medrash says that when somebody used to return from Yerushalayim, the people in his community would set up a platform for him where he'd be able to share all of the chachma that he gained in Yerushalayim. That's how valuable what the experience was deemed to be. In fact, when Chazal referred to a variety of people, we saw this here in Masech Sanhedrin. Sometimes they referred to someone not just by his name, but Ish Yerushalayim. Or sometimes they'll refer to Anshe Yerushalayim or Kahala Kadisha Shab Yerushalayim. Why these titles? Why do they have to refer to them as Ish Yerushalayim, Kala Kadisha Shab Yerushalayim? Because we assume it changes a person. It brings you to a different level. We know it. We know it intuitively. If you spent any time in Yerushalayim and you see these Yerushalmi Yidden, you see those little kids that are running through the Rova with Tanakh on the tip of their tongues, and they're living a different kind of existence. You know that there's a certain spirituality that we just don't have. That we're just not there. That they're zocha to have. And Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky is also a great proponent of Minhagi Yerushalayim. And he says we have examples in Chazal where Minhagim that started in Yerushalayim became widespread and became takanos for the Klal Yisrael. One example that he gives is from Sanhedrin Daf Lamed. We learned this year, Nikiei Hadas Shab Yerushalayim Shei Machnisim Levali Dinin V'Shomen Devrayim Machnisim Ve'edim V'Shomen Devrayim U'Motzinos on L'Chutz, and then V'Nosim V'Nosim V'Davar. What would happen? Their way of dealing with cases in Beis Din was that the Bali Din would come in, they'd state their case. Then the Bali Din would go out, the Eidim would come in, and the Eidim would state their cases, and then they would go out, and then the Beis Din would discuss it. That system started in Yerushalayim. It started as a Nikiei Hadas Shab Yerushalayim. But historically, have an appreciation for what Eretz Yisrael is before there was ever Kedusha to Eretz Yisrael. Why did the Avos, why were they so hesitant to leave Eretz Yisrael? Yitzchak never left. Avram only left when he was absolutely forced to. And Yaakov felt so guilty about the 22 years he was out that he thought, according to the Midrashim, he thought that those years were going to be his undoing, and that's why Esav was going to defeat him. We didn't have kibush v'chiluk. There was no, we weren't makdish the land yet, and yet they still felt this incredible connection to Eretz Yisrael because it's what the land is. It's inherent to the inherent nature of the land. We leave Mitzrayim as a people, as a Jewish people, 600,000, 3 million strong, whatever you however you want to count it, 600,000 males between the age of 20 and 60. What's the goal? To get to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu's most fervent, unfulfilled desire to be able to get to Eretz Yisrael. He had a pretty fulfilled life. You know, he wrote the best-selling book in the history of mankind. He brought us the Torah. I mean, that's pretty significant. He took a nation that was a slave nation and brought us out 3 million strong, led us through the desert for 40 years. Yeah, you'd think his life was pretty fulfilled, but he felt unfulfilled. Can you imagine someone who accomplished what Moshe Rabbeinu accomplished and he felt like unfulfilled? He felt a little empty inside? Why did he feel empty with all that he accomplished? You know, every time I think of my excuse for not being in Eretz Yisrael, and I say, oh, it's because I'm doing so much good. It's so much good. I think to get 10 people to take my place and do a better job than I do, probably. But so much good here in Chutz Lars. Moshe Rabbeinu did a lot more good, and yet he felt empty. He felt like a shell of a person. He felt that was his unfulfilled desire. It's where he wanted to be. And it's built into the Torah that three times a year we have to go to Yerushalayim. You have to gain the inspiration of being in Yerushalayim at least three times a year. Not to mention all the times you want to bring your Maaser Sheni there so that you could eat it, and your Bikurim that you have to bring to Yerushalayim. And the Medrash says that despite the tremendous quantities of people that were in Yerushalayim all the time, especially at these three times a year, no one ever felt crowded. They never felt like, ugh, it's so stuffy here and it's crowded, because there's always room. When there's ahava, when there's achdus, when there's a sense of belonging, and a sense that everybody belongs, then you're not going to feel crowded. The Gemara has such an expression, Sanhedrin Dav Zayin, Ki rechimtin hava azizi apusi desaf siri shachivin, that when our love for each other is strong, there's enough room for the two of us on the tip of a pin, on the tip of a needle. What does that mean? Obviously, there's not enough room for anybody on the tip of a needle, but it's an expression that when we love each other and we feel like we belong together and we feel like we both belong here, it doesn't matter what the physical conditions are, and you don't feel like you're missing so much. So you don't have the giant mansion in Beverly Hills or in Lawrence or whatever in Yerushalayim, but still, it doesn't feel crowded. It doesn't feel like you don't belong. And once Yerushalayim was destroyed, the Jewish people made a vow to never forget it. Imeshkachech Yerushalayim. The Nevi'im are full of this, Yeshayo, Yirmiyo, how we always have to have Yerushalayim on our minds, and that's why in every tefillah, in every Birchas HaMazon, all we talk about, it's not all of it, but it's much of what we talk about, is Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael, Es Samach David, Yerushalayim Ircha. So we're always talking about it. It's always on our mind. It's a scandal if it's something that doesn't cross our mind each and every day. Because that would mean, if it doesn't cross our mind each and every day, that just means we're not paying attention to the words that we are saying in Shemona Esrei. If we just pay attention to the words that are coming out of our mouth, we are talking about it each and every day, and we mean it. Historically, even after the Churban HaBayis, there was always Jewish presence that remained, except for a very short time after the first Churban, after the second Churban, there were always Jews there. And the Gemara Ksuvos tells us, even if it's a lesser spiritual community in Eretz Yisrael, you should still live there, because Eretz Yisrael makes up for it. Even the Tanaim, most of the Tanaim, many of the Gedolei Amoraim lived in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara tells stories about them. When Rav Zera went to Eretz Yisrael, he couldn't find a bridge to go over, so he took this thin little plank of wood and he tried to make his way over, and a tzeduki saw him and says, you impetuous people, look what you're doing, you're risking your own life. And Rav Zera's response, duchti de Moshe va'aron lo zachu, ani miyemar de zachina. He says, Aaron and Moshe weren't zocher to come here, then they were dying to come here, and look what I'm going to be able to be zocher to do. It's something that would be very exciting for a person, it should be very exciting for a Jew to be able to get into Eretz Yisrael, to appreciate the Kedusha of the land, and throughout history, Rabbi Yehuda Levi desperately tried to get to Eretz Yisrael. Tradition is that when he got to Shari Yerushalayim and he saw the Churban of Yerushalayim, he was so overtaken with emotion that he composed all the kinos we say on Tisha B'Av, starting from Tzion Halotisha L'Shalom Asirayich through the rest, all the Tzion kinos. He composed them right then and there in a fit of emotional trauma from seeing Yerushalayim b'Churbana. What do we feel when we go to Yerushalayim? We have to do we feel that way? Do we feel the trauma of seeing a dome on top of the Makom HaMikdash? Do we feel the trauma of not being able to see Kohen B'Avodasam? Do we feel the excitement of being able to walk through the holy streets of Yerushalayim? Do we feel the excitement of walking on the ground that our avos walked on? It's not just a place where there are decent restaurants and a lot of good friends and a nice vacation spot. We have to see it for what it is, for part of what defines us as Jews. Even non-religious Jews throughout history have had a yearning for Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky thinks that they don't themselves understand why they wanted Eretz Yisrael so badly. So they can't understand it. Meaning they'll say, we want an Eretz Meledes, we want a place for the Jewish people. Why do you identify with the Jewish people when you don't identify with anything Jewish? If you eat ham and cheese, right, and you don't do any mitzvahs, and everything else that your great-great-grandfather stood for, you completely reject, why would it be so important for you to identify with the Jewish people? You can't explain it. It doesn't make logical sense where this identity comes from, where this desire to build up the land and to be part of the land comes from. He said he compares it to like someone who doesn't believe in the afterlife, or even someone does, to care about what his matseva is like when he's gone. What is the stone on top of your bones? Like, what? You're not going to be there. It's just your bones. Why do you care so much? Why does it matter? You can't explain it, but it does. You can't explain why it matters, but instinctively you know that it does, and you know that it means something. So knowing that it means something, that's the intuition, the Jewish neshama that was coming out in all of these people who have helped build up Eretz Yisrael over the past several decades. And Rav Chaim Tukhachinsky should realize, he died after 1948, but before 1967. He died after Hakamas HaMedina, so he experienced that incredible high, but he did not get to see the Yerushalayim Biyadenu. He did not get to see us get back the old city of Yerushalayim. And you have to realize there was a little give and take there, because access to Yerushalayim was lost prior to 1967. Before that, you know, before we had our own Medina, we had plenty of access to Yerushalayim. It just wasn't so geschmack to live there, because it wasn't the best living conditions. But there were plenty of, there was access. There were Jews there. We were able to go there. We lost access, and that's what he saw. So he saw, you know, literally the winds of change blowing at a very rapid pace as he was writing this and as he was developing his own opinions. And he said, if you think about this, I never thought about it. He said, Goy Goyim have this incredible attachment to Eretz Yisrael. They know that it's important. You ever show someone on a map who doesn't know what Eretz Yisrael is? They just read about Israel in the news. Show them on the map what it is. You know, where's the lands there? That one? No, that's Egypt. That's Saudi Arabia. No, that one. See that little one? That little guy right there? Yeah, that one. That's what all the fuss is about? Yeah, that's what all the fuss is about. When Yeshua comes into Eretz Yisrael, what does he find there? Who's there? How many kings are in Eretz Yisrael? 31 kings. Tiny little bit of land. How powerful could these kings have been? They had to, 31 of them, this tiny little bit of land. Now, obviously, these were kings over other places. But you weren't a king unless you had a spot in Eretz Yisrael also. That was the Makom Chashuv. That's where you had to be. So, yeah, they had Egypt, they had Syria. They had all the different places that they were kings over. Not Egypt, that was Paro. But they had all these different places that they were kings over. But they had to have a slice of Eretz Yisrael also. Otherwise, their Malchus was never complete. It was this Islam, Christianity. They have Mekomos HaKadoshim. And Rav Chaim Kashinsky points out, they have Mekomos HaKadoshim. They have what they call holy sites in Israel. We don't have holy sites in Israel. The entire country is holy. It's a big chiluk. It's not just a place that happens to have this holy spot or that holy spot. The way we view the country is every piece of dirt, the clump of dirt that comes down from the ceiling in Rabbi Chaim Kashinsky's home is fused with Kedusha. And it's very interesting how he points out when we finally do have a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, we lost access to Yerushalayim. And he tries to make peace with that, to try to explain that. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu let that happen? Why is it that there was this give and take? That we finally got a Malchus Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, and then pre-1967, we lost access to Yerushalayim. So he says, maybe it's because we're simply not ready. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't want to give us the keys. We're not ready to be Bailim on the Makom HaMikdash. But he says, it could also be that the Navi in Zechariah, he says, maybe it's a fulfillment of what the Navi in Zechariah describes, where the other side of Yerushalayim, what we call Jerusalem nowadays, which isn't really part of the Era Atika, is built up only then to be brought into, to expand into the real Yerushalayim. That it's going to happen in stages. That we build up the surrounding areas, and then ultimately we get to build up Yerushalayim itself, and we work inward to finally building the Beis HaMikdash, which hopefully proves to be prophetic, right? We got back in 67, the Era Atika, look what we've done, look what we've built, look what we've been able to accomplish there already, and then slowly but surely, in Yirtzeh Hashem, we're going to be Zoche to build the Beis HaMikdash after that. You have to realize, Geula, no one ever said Geula happens, you know, mamish in a moment where everything goes from the worst to the best. It takes time. The speed at which it did occur is really astonishing. You know, to go from where we were as a people in 1945 to where we were as a people in 1948 to where we were as a people in 1967. And every time I go to Israel, just look around when you go to Israel at the amount of cranes and construction vehicles and the amount of construction that's going on. You know, as much as people want to say it's they're anti-religious government and this, look what they're doing to our land. They're obviously paving the way for Mashiach. Are they not paving the way for our Geula? It's so obvious. They're building the whole place up. Whatever they believe in, it's terrible and it hurts us that they don't believe in all the things that they should believe in, that so many of the people don't believe in things that they should believe in. Look what they're doing. They're building up a land for Mashiach to come, for us to be able to have a base of Mikdash, for us to be able to make Aliyah L'Regel. The infrastructure is being built, and what they were able to build in 64 years is incredible. It's mind-boggling. And Rav Yechiel Michel says, part of being Doresh Yerushalayim means it should always be a topic of discussion. It should be at the forefront of our minds. We should daven about it. When we celebrate a Simcha, it should be Al Rosh Simcha Seinu. We should keep in mind things that are Zechel Migdash and Zechel Chorban, the Chazal built in. But it's also an obligation to always ask ourselves if our time has come to return and to rebuild. It's not enough to be Doresh Yerushalayim by saying we remember when. We also have to be forward-looking. We have to say, well, wait a second. Okay, I remember when, but now what's going on now? Do I belong there now? Can I help rebuild it now? Is it all about me and personally my life is a little bit easier right now? Or do we have a grand vision of Klal Yisrael and my place in the broader Jewish people? And when we have that grand vision of where a Jew belongs and where a Jew is going to end up, we realize we're all going to end up there. one way or the other, are we going to help make it happen? Are we going to be one of the heroes that helps to make it happen, that helps to build it up? And he says he split up the Sefer into five parts. I'm going to go through all the different five parts, but the last paragraph of the Hakdama is amazing. He says in the very last paragraph of the Hakdama, Tzeirah Kodesh V'Amikdash, you have it in your packets. We didn't read anything else in the packets, so I might as well read the last paragraph. He says the last paragraph is in brackets, but three lines before that. He says, Ulam Kayom Asher L'Kayevenu HaGadol Garashnu Me'ir HaAtika. Writing between 1948 and 1967, he says, I wrote this whole sefer about the power of Jerusalem and everything, you know, the Kedusha, and we don't have access. We're expelled from the old city. V'nisrokna legamri mitoshva ha-Yehudim. There is no Jewish quarter. There are no Jews living there. Nutal misifreinu zeh, chelik chashuv me'erko. And therefore this sefer loses so much of its value. Basher harbe prake me'advarim ha-medubarim ba lo l'maisa heim le'esata. So much of what I write in here, he says, is no longer l'maisa. Because we don't have access to the Aratika. By the time the sefer is published, his son adds in the brackets. His son, I forget his son's name, Nun Aleph Tav, something to Kaczynski. His son adds in the brackets. Todal lekel, zachinu shekvar ke'es hatfasas ha-sefer, lo rak shenaso shuv chelegim l'shimushi, elegam kol ha-sefer kulo hu aktuali ma'od. By the time the sefer goes to publish, where he wasn't able to publish it in his lifetime, by the time they go to publish the sefer, not only does it become somewhat l'maisa, the entire sefer is halacha l'maisa. We have Yerushalayim, we have a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael, we're in control of Yerushalayim. People are dying for a sefer like this because no one knows anything. For years and years, no one studied these things. And they need to know. And can we bring karbanos? He has a whole chelek hay of the sefer. Can you bring karbanos nowadays? We're in this in-between period where the gula has begun, but it's not yet completed, and we're somewhere in between. So what stage are we at? And that's the tremendous miracle that he saw in his lifetime, and Mirza Hashem, we should be zochet to see the completion of in our lifetimes. So.